Welcome to the Hammer Time Radio Show, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio. I am Maurice. We are on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. This has been a great week throughout the entire area. We're very proud to be part of it. The week sort of started out, which was rather interesting. I made an announcement several weeks ago that we acquired a brand new cabinet company. They have 30 different styles available of cabinets and over 1,800 SKUs or units per style. They are a cabinet company that is indicated such that they build to the order instead of building to inventory. So two of the executive vice presidents flew out from Houston to take a look at A Handyman's Haven, one of their major distributors in the United States, and we were very happy and thankful to entertain them throughout their interlude in Tucson, Arizona. We, of course, enjoyed some of the fine Mexican food that was available, some outstanding dishes from that standpoint, and they were very pleased with what they saw, and we were very happy and thankful that they decided to come out and visit us. It's quite an honor from our standpoint, the owner, as well as a complete staff of A Handyman's Haven. The Tucson location is at 1724 South 6th Avenue. This places you six blocks south of 22nd Street. We're known as the Big Yellow Building on the west side of the street as you're driving southbound. If you get to 29th Street, we're back over your right shoulder. Unfortunately, you missed the yellow building, but you can go around a corner and come back up on 28th Street and find our store relatively easy. The address again is 1724 South 6th Avenue. Our phone number on location is 520-624-7200. Our hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. With the holiday weekend coming up, we will be closed from December 23rd and opening back up again January 2nd in the year 2020. So keep that in mind if you plan on calling or coming down and visit us, that all transactions will have to be completed by the day of closure. Actually, it'll be on Saturday the 22nd from that standpoint. Or the 21st, whatever Saturday is. I don't have it loaded at the present time. Our Green Valley location is at the northern end of Green Valley, coming off of the Duval Mine Road exit on I-19. There is a way to weave from the south through Green Valley area, north up into 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103 Alpha. Hours of operation are normally from about 8:30 in the morning to about 4 p.m. in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. They are closed Saturday and Sunday. So keep that in mind from that standpoint. Their closure over the holiday weekends will be the same from the 23rd of December, opening back up again on the 2nd of January in 2020. This will give us a good opportunity to spend time with family and friends, enjoy some relaxation due to the intensity that occurs throughout the rest of the year at A Handyman's Haven. So some of the major events that have been occurring, we did order in a double door system for a customer. It is actually a swinging door and a side light. We had to fit it into a 76-inch opening left or right and an 82-inch height from the floor to the ceiling or the bottom of the header. The interesting thing is we got some misinformation and we had the door swinging the improper way for the customer. So this entailed trying to get the door prepped. We had a couple choices, one to send it back to the factory or to have it reworked or to order a brand new door system. Unfortunately, that would have processed the door on its arrival in mid-January of 2020. So we elected to tackle the project ourselves in our mill shop, and we're about ready to complete that in the next day or so. and we actually have to switch the side light to the opposite end and have the door swing properly for the customer. So even though our extreme diligence in trying to iron these things out before we order, sometimes the misinformation comes in and the door gets loaded the wrong way. One door was a 42-inch door and the side light was a 22-inch side light. Both panels had inserts in them with clear glass, the full height of the operation, with many blinds included in the center of the two panes of glass since it was an exterior door system. So switching it around has been a tremendous learning experience for us. We were able to get it done in about 4 days, where the factory would have probably taken much more, like I said, going into the January from that standpoint. Many of you know that we do extensive countertop work, whether it's laminate countertop or whether they're quartz or natural stone countertops. So in the quartz and natural stone countertops, we can order in for the customers a pre-assembled countertop that has the sink installed already with the entire operation ready to install. This is available in the bathroom or vanity arrangement of countertops by itself. We can include backsplashes. We can include side splashes. We could also include faucet holes, depending upon the type of faucet that you plan on using. There are several combinations that are available. A lot of folks use a single hole faucet system, where the hot and cold water are off of levers, as they have a rather interesting spigot arrangement that provides the water to the bowl. They can either be a vessel-type bowl system where the bowl itself sits right on the counter. It can be a top-mount system where the bowl actually slides into the top to a pre-designed hole, or it could be an undermount system. Predominantly, a lot of people are using undermounts from that standpoint. The bowls can either be rectangular in shape, they could be oval in shape, and they come in colors normally of white or bisque. So basically speaking, when you order a countertop of this nature, when it arrives in about 2 weeks, you can install it yourself. It's all pre-installed with the undermount, at least, attached to it. And then you can just set it in place, use a little bit of silicone to hold it to the top of the cabinetry. You do not need any under substrate in order to set it on. It can go right on the top of the cabinet from that standpoint. If you need multiple holes in there for various aspects because you've changed the desire of your faucet system from a one hole to a four hole on a 4-inch center or even on an 8-inch center, which affords you some different opportunities, that can be accomplished at our local store. Load it in and you'll be ready to go. The 8-inch system is pretty interesting because we can tailor that towards ADA qualifications in that one may want to have the faucet in the center in the back of the bowl and then the hot and cold water system sitting on the right or left depending upon the customer's action as far as what hand they would like to use. We can do that. We can put the faucet on the left side as an example if you like and then put the controls for the hot and cold water on the right side. So lots of flexibility. We can do that for you at A Handyman's Haven, and that gives us a tremendous opportunity to fulfill the needs that you may have. The countertop itself, if it's pre-ordered with the sink attached, is heavy enough that we're just a silicone on the cabinet surface will hold it in place for you from that standpoint. Well, we are transmitting on AM 1030. The Voice with your trusted local news and talk. Our production engineer today is the wonderful Kent. And looks like we've completed the first segment. So, Kent, just take it away and we'll have some good times. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio on frequency AM 1030, The Voice with your trusted local news and talk. I'm Maurice from A Handyman's Haven. We're here today to invite the listening audience, as every weekend on Sunday as an example, to give us a call. Let us know what's going on within your projects. If you have any questions, we'll try to answer them for you. and we'll keep the program rolling with some interesting comments from the listening audience. So just as we finish up the first segment, we're talking about some countertops. I'd like to talk to you about some laminate countertops at the present time. We sell laminate countertops in a linear footage arrangement. So much per linear footage, generally speaking. It is rounded up to the next foot, sometimes 2 foot, depending upon how close we are to the end. We bring in 12-foot slabs, which is rather interesting because there's not many retail operations in Tucson that will provide you with a 12-foot slab. We actually stock them in 7 colors in our store. We can get those set up for you in a short period of time. So if you need 3 feet as an example, we'll sell you 3 feet. If you need longer than that, we'll provide you with a longer piece from that nature. You don't need to buy the full 12-footer, so 3 feet basically would cost you about $27 initially. That could be enough to cover your vanity or some other foyer arrangement that you may have. 9 feet of countertop would cost you $81 as a basic to start off with. There are various prices depending upon the surfaces of the laminate countertops that are available. Miter cuts at whatever various angle that you may need. Standard angles are normally 22.5 degrees as well as 45. There is an upcharge for those. You know, a miter cut sounds pretty simple until you have to work within the integrated backsplash of these countertops. But it does require 2 cuts. This goes back to junior high or high school geometry, plane geometry. You've taken that both lengths on the 45 or the 22.5 have to be equal in size. You cannot vary them and expect them to match up in the angle cuts that you may need. So you get 2 cuts on a miter cut. You got 8 bolt holes that have to be drilled so you can hold the countertop together. You receive 4 bolts, and all that's for $35. So that doesn't indicate very much expense when you want to have a countertop of that nature. There are some additional charges if you so desire. End capping or finishing the ends is extra. We can also cut anybody else's laminate countertops. There is an additional charge for doing that, but we do stock our own, and if any of those meet your needs, or we can get them shipped in on about a 2-week basis. All straight cuts are complimentary when there are in-stock line of countertops. So keep that in mind if you happen to need them. Our specialty, as an example, which is occurring quite regularly, we picked up 3 additional jobs this past week of doing what we call a seamless countertop or a one-piece countertop with various angles attached or associated with it. These countertops, so they're at about $20 a square foot. They include all splashes. They include finished ends. They include several front edges, which could be available. There is a slight upcharge for various edges, or we can do the classic edge, which Formica originated back in the 1900s from that standpoint. It gives you a lot of flexibility, and it gets rid of the increase of expansion and contraction that occurs in every home, which normally speaking, the miter cuts themselves will tend to separate. Therefore, when you wash your countertop continually with either soap or water, whatever it may happen to be, the water will drift into the substrate and cause it to expand and contract and create a little bit of a rough edge. Needless to say, that does get rather dirty and looks rather ugly in time. So we can eliminate the miter cuts, which also gives you a faulty look in a corner that's expanding and contract. So come on down, let us know what your needs are. We have got 500 to 700 different colors that are available that we can order in with various surfaces, either by Formica or by the Wilson Art Company. I'd like to talk about an email I received this past week, which is rather interesting. For you do-it-yourselfers out there that uses a lot of tools, I don't know how everybody else is, but I'm sort of addicted to tools. I like the fascination of them. From that standpoint, I also found out this past week that one of our cabinet manufacturing companies has bought a very simplistic tool, as an example, for about $350,000. And you may wonder, what comes at that expense? This is called a robotic sander. I didn't even know that one was available because I'm not in that form of the industry or manufacturing process. But this sander has the electric eyes on it that can recognize an imperfection in the surface of the material that they are using, and it will go over to that little area and take its robotic sander as an example and sand out the smoothness of it. When it's detected that it's smooth enough, it'll move on to another area of the surface that needs to have some sanding. So this has been quite an expense, and they do plan on buying additional equipment like this because of the savings of time and the accuracy that can be developed from that standpoint. So I thought that was an interesting piece of robotic machinery that's available, let alone the what we call the CNC machines, which is a computerized, numerically controlled. I did study that when I was in college at the University of Arizona. At that time period, we did not have digitization, and everything was done by the IBM card decks. If anybody has been associated with that, you know how intense that those cards are. And there are some funny stories that I can remember attached to the IBM card decks. The other thing that I came across was due to an email is a 6.5-inch coping saw. And many of you that have used a coping saw, you know that's a very, very small blade that's involved. It can cut almost a 90-degree corner, as an example, as you can turn the operation in the angular decision that you need to have. However, they've got one now that the entire cut that it can make is less than 3/16 of an inch. The material that designed the associated with holding the blade is an aircraft aluminum. It's very thin type aluminum from that standpoint. It weighs only 9 ounces. And you can pull a blade so tight, or so taut, as it says, that it sings when it's cutting. It cuts tighter corners than any other coping saw on earth. The indexing steel blade, blade hooks rotate a full 360 degrees. They lock solid in 8 different positions, which is every 45 degrees. And it accepts the standard 6.5-inch pinned blades that are available today. It comes at a very, very minor cost, if you folks are interested. The advertised retail price right now is $159 for a coping saw. I've never heard of a coping saw and its blades coming at that price. I bought many of them over my time period as we worked through various concepts, but this is very interesting, and I'll have to think when I'm going to invest in this type of a blade. So if it is available, it's available by New Concepts. From that standpoint, I received the email from a magazine called the Popular Woodworking Magazine. So anyway, give that a whirl if you're interested in the fine use of a coping saw in various activities that you may like to utilize. It's especially important when you're cutting pieces of wood that may be only 1/8 of an inch thick or maybe 3/16 of an inch thick in order to make various patterns that you may need. So, the way we go with things like that. A lot of requests recently. It's interesting how things sort of bounce around. I'll just sort of plant the seed and we'll talk a little bit about it after the next break that's coming up. But as a refacing of cabinetry, most individuals and most customers think refacing is going to be a ganga savings over what's taking place. I'll discuss this a little more extensive. It can be cost effective depending upon what your goals are for your refacing operation. So we're coming to the completion of our second segment. We're going to have Kent take it away, and we'll see you folks after the break. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice, transmitting in the A. Handy Man's Haven radio studio on frequency AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. We entered, we left the last segment introducing refacing. A lot of people have heard about this, and let me just back up a little bit. If you'd like to enter the conversation today, give us a call here at 520-790-2040. I'd be interested in listening to what you have going on your remodeling projects, as well as maybe we can assist you in some questions that you may have or find some answers to those types of questions. So refacing, the basic term of refacing when it was first introduced has to do with developing a brand new door system, a brand new drawer front, and also preparing the face frame that the cabinets basically have, or if it happens to be a European style cabinet, and just fixing up the edges of the side panels of the cabinet, that so it all looks fairly decent and good from that standpoint. Most people think that refacing is going to be a gonga savings from that aspect, because all I have to do is put on a brand new door and put on a brand new drawer front, and then accomplish finishing the face frames or the side edges, depending upon the type of cabinet. And that could be no further from the truth, except in certain indications. So we'll talk about those in a little bit here from that standpoint. And some of the questions, I guess I'll get into it right now. Some of the questions that you may want to think about, which really affect the cost factor from that standpoint, is do you plan on selling your home in a short order? And of course, today most homes can sell in a short order. Many times homes are sold and then they're remodeled by the seller in coming up with the various aspects that they want to have accomplished. But if you're going to sell your home right away and you want to get out and move, you happen to change jobs, whatever it happened to be, refacing could be a yes from that standpoint. Another item that you may want to consider is, do you enjoy your cabinet presentation? Do you enjoy your workspace? And if everything is in your kitchen is according to the way you would like to have it from your cabinetry, then if the answer is yes, then you could also be associated with refacing. Do you desire a new countertop? And if the answer is yes, you do desire a new countertop, you may not be a candidate for refacing, because by the time you take a look at everything else that's going on, the new countertop can be rather expensive from that standpoint also. We'll take a little diversion right now. We see we have a phone caller. So, Charles, welcome to the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio.
Oh, thanks, Maurice. You know, I thought it was pretty interesting that you mentioned the robot sanders.
Yes,
go ahead. You were talking about them being available. Yeah, I ordered one.
You did.
It has a really interesting reaction whenever it comes up on a knot in the wood. It actually tells you, it gives you an audible warning. It's kind of neat. You want to hear it?
Sure, why not?
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No.
That's what it says.
That's what it says, huh? Okay.
Yeah, whenever it comes up on a knot in the wood.
A knot in the wood, huh?
Yeah.
Danger, well, I appreciate that comment very well, Charles. That's very appropriate for the discussion we were having today.
All right. Thanks, Maurice.
You're welcome. Enjoy and Merry Christmas to you. So getting back to the refacing type operation, we talked about the countertop. If you desire a new countertop, well, you basically speaking, you may not be a candidate for refacing. Is your existing lighting okay within your kitchen? Or do you like to add some additional lighting, under-counter lighting? Or you like to have some low lighting when the kitchen main lights are off, such as your toe kick lighting or under your countertop lighting or under cabinet lighting? Any of those types of things that you like to have require some electrical wiring that may need to take place. There is a tremendous advantage in those, because now you can direct your lighting to your work area. Also, it's less expensive from the utilization standpoint, in that most of the lighting from that category is the LED, light-emitting diode lighting, which uses a transformer to take the 130 20 volts down to 12 volts, and it runs it on DC power instead of the alternating current DC being direct power, which is more like a battery-operated power system versus an alternating current system that almost everything in a home is operated with. So all these other items. You know, another major thing that occurs is, are you going to change your appliances? Do you like the location of your present appliances? Or are you going to move them around in various aspects? So all these now entail an additional cost. So if that's going to occur, you may not be a candidate for refacing. Are you going to paint your kitchen while you're doing all this? So the answer could be yes. The answer could be no. You can obviously repaint the wall structure and everything else without changing anything else out but the cabinet door and drawer front. But if you are going to change all these sorts of things out, you obviously are not a candidate for a refacing. So these are some very, very important questions that the customer needs to go through in order to ensure that they're making the cost-appropriate decision that they would like to expense. I do know that it is a shocker many times to a customer. We just worked out one not too long ago where the customer just wanted new doors and new drawers, but they planned on living in the home for another 15 to 20 years, and they were happy with everything that they had in there. They just wanted to change the door and drawer style. So when the price came up, it was sort of a shocker sticker, or a sticker shocker, whatever you want to call it, a shocker from that standpoint, sticker shocker from that standpoint, and they'll have to reconsider it and move on down the line. So there is a significant in cost. The other interesting thing, which most of us did not know, maybe some of us know today, is that the cost of replacing a cabinet door and drawer front could be 80 to 85% the cost of a cabinet. So you think if you're paying $150, $200 for a door or drawer, if 80% of that cost is going to be attached to the door itself. We rarely see doors come under $100, and drawer fronts obviously are much less because there's less involved. So keep that in mind when you're going to take a look at refacing. It's always worthwhile to check it out and give someone to give you the cost. On a refacing operation, if you're going to do the entire refacing yourself, then the labor is what we call sweat equity, and that may not cost you very much, just the materials itself. But if you're going to have to hire someone in to get on their hands and knees and do all the installing that needs to take place, again, don't be sticker shocked at the price, because that is labor that people are going to be charging for accomplish that. I've done a little bit of this myself, and I can tell you that it was quite an experience. It does take a lot of time in applying the materials. You can have somebody come in and paint your cabinets for you. They can paint them right in a location. Again, if you like everything that you have, then that would work out extremely appropriate for you from that standpoint. And that's also done in a short order, so you can get right back into it. The next thing I'd like to talk about is doors. I did talk a little bit about one of the projects that we had in reconstructing a door system earlier in the show. Installing doors are quite intriguing and quite interesting. Most people, and this is not being tactically incorrect with those people who want to do it as a do-it-yourselfer, however, there are some guides and there's some good YouTube information available as far as installing doors. Let's just take a door only. So customers come in quite frequently and say they would like to have a brand new door and would like to know if we could do the hinge placements for them as well as the doorknob placements. And, well, the answer is yes, we can. We got two choices. One, we can let the factory do it, which are very precise in their operation, or we could do it in-house, of which we are also very precise in where they need to go. But there's a lot of questions that have to be answered in both operations. When we send it out to the factory, it could take up to 7 days in order to get the product back. We may be able to do it on a short order in our mill shop, of which we do quite regularly. But we do have to have a lot of answers A lot of questions answered in both operations. In other words, where are the hinge placements? Where is the doorknob going to be placed? Which direction does the door swing? And that's always a very interesting question, and listening to all the answers and the thought process. We at A Handyman's Haven like to say, put your back up against the hinge. And folks, it does not make any difference at all which way the door swings, what the composition of the material of the door is, whether it's a piece of paper or it's a 10-ton door, it's immaterial. As most of us know, doors in the vertical operation either swing to the left or swing to the right. So you put your back up against the hinge. It does not make any difference whether you're inside or whether you're outside. It does not make any difference of whether it's an in-swinging door or an out-swinging door. With your back up to the hinge, the door is only going to be swinging one direction. That's either going to be to the left or it's going to be swinging to the right. So whether the door is closed, your back up against the hinge, it either is going to open to the right or it's going to open to the left. It's really very simple. This happens to be the old-fashioned method of coming up with door swinging from years past when anybody was wanting a swinging door in their home. So keep that in mind. Think about it from that standpoint. Just go back home or stay at home and go to one of your doors and put your back up against the hinge. It doesn't make any difference whether you're on the edge, whether you're on the inside, on the outside, whether the door is open or the door is closed. It's only going to swing from the closed position to one edge. That's the important part of it. With that in mind, that makes things very, very simple from that standpoint. So let's talk about the installation of doors. So once we can get the door for you, installing a door only is really very simplistic. Many times we have customers come back after we've cut the placement of the hinges for them. They say, the hinges are in the wrong spot. The door is not installing properly, and so on and so forth. And we're going to have a brand new door at your expense, and et cetera, et cetera. So we talked to them a little bit about them. We sent them on their way, and I'll just plant the seed here. We'll pick up this at the end of this next break. We're transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. Kent, please take it away. Back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. So as we left the last segment, we're talking about hanging doors, a little bit how the doors were swinging back and forth. I'll just iterate it again. But if you'd like to give us a call here at the studio today on frequency or on a telephone, 520-790-2040, please accomplish that. So hanging a door only, it's really pretty easy. So the thing to do is to separate the leaves of your hinge. A hinge has two leaves. It has a pin in the center normally, assuming it's one has to be careful with a ball bearing type hinge. But to pull the pin out, attach the leaves to the frame of the opening that you want to hang the door in, and attach the leaves to the door itself. So in Arizona, they use three hinges on most interior doors. California uses two for some reason. I haven't quite figured out the reason why, except California, as we well know, is all a little bit different than the rest of the world. But anyway, attach them in a loose fashion. Don't tighten them down nice and tight. So leave them sort of floppy where they can move up and down within the screw hole that is embedded in the, or that's cut into the hinge. Then go ahead and insert the top pin. Move the door into position. Line up the hinges itself in their loose fashion, the leaves. Insert the top pin, and then maneuver the bottom pin in position by moving the door up close to the hinge. When that's all taken care of, then you can insert the middle pin, or the middle pin on the two leaves, and now you're ready to anchor the door to the wall or the frame structure, as well as to the door itself. And don't just tighten them all at once, but do it sort of like the heads on on an automobile engine. You know, tighten one and then go down and tighten the other a little bit, and then go down to the bottom and tighten one and position everything in the proper location. And I would venture to say that you'll have a very high success rate on attaching the door. I do know when people come in and tell us that the hinges aren't lined up right, you've cut them in the wrong spot, and so on and so forth, that we ask them to take the door back, and this is how we want them to install it. And lo and behold, we never see them again. Unfortunately, they don't come back and say, geez, thank you very much for the tip. They worked out rather well, but they felt that whatever they happen to be feeling. So it's rather interesting from that standpoint. So there are techniques in doing a lot of things when you're working around a home project. A pre-hung door. It may be worthwhile to seek out a YouTube format on installing pre-hung doors. A pre-hung door means that the door comes already embedded in a frame structure. Everything is secured nice and tight. We have had a customer a while back that said we sold them a non-square door, and therefore the door wouldn't open and close properly and so on and so forth. So I said, well, pretty simple. I said, well, bring the door back down here along with the frame. Just leave it all attached, and we'll take a look at it when you bring it in. Well, the first thing I did is, ta-da, people would probably suspect, I went and got a nice framing square, which is a 2 foot by 18 inch, 90 degree right angle square. I put it on the door as the customer was there, and I says, gee whiz, I've checked all four corners now, and this whole thing is just perfectly square. So how did you figure out that this door was out of square? He says, well, I installed a frame up against the house and everything else, and nothing was square after that. Well, did you ever think about that the opening that you're trying to put it in is a non-squared opening? And you could see the glaze in his eyes like a deer in the headlights and so on and so forth. So anyway, he went back home with the door, and we tried to help him solve the problem. But in solving a pre-hung door, in other words, a door that already has the frame attached, that's how the frames and the doors are built. They're built as a unit. And I've seen the production of them from that standpoint. They come down sort of a conveyor system. The doors are loaded in. The frames are added on. There's router systems that are attached to the mechanical equipment itself. It routers the door with the dapping, as we call it, D-A-P-P-I-N-G, where the hinges are supposed to go, predicated on how the system is set up. It routers the frame, predicated how the system is set up again, and then they're all attached, and then the door is stood up. It's sent over to an area where it's going to be loaded onto a pallet. If there's multiple doors that are going to one customer, as an example, four or five doors on a pallet, and the door is held in position by mechanical arms, it is rotated around with a shrink wrap sitting there, and it's all strapped together, and before you know it, it's moved out on a roller system and ready to load it in the truck for the next day's distribution. Rather fascinating how everything goes from that standpoint. But a pre-hung door, the first thing that needs to be done is you need to check the levelness, not the flatness, but the levelness of the floor between the two legs or the two openings, the left and right opening of the stud system associated with the door. So if it is not level, then you have to pick the high point. And the high point on the hinge side, as an example, is probably the better point, and that's where the pre-hung door system should start to be installed. Or if it's the latch side that's the high point, then you'll have to transmit that point across the width of the door opening, obviously with a level, with the bubble in the center, not the bubble on either the left or right side, if you know what a level looks like, and mark that point, and that's where the pre-hung door bottom of the frame needs to start. Along with this, one has to be aware of the plumbness. And what we mean by plumbness, and this sounds rather extravagant in a way, but the frame of the home, the studs or the door bucks, as they're called sometime periods, when you put a string with a weight on the bottom of it, sometimes we use a plumb bob, and you put it up in the corner of the hinge side corner at the upper level. That string should be perfectly straight and in line with the door studs, the wall studs, door bucks, whatever you want to use as a term. If it's not, then you have to make that straight and in line with the center core of the earth. That's called plumbing the hinge frame of the door. So once you get that all established and anchored in place, you may have to use a lot of shims. Shims are wedges, so to speak. They're inserted from one side and the other side, that's so they're evenly distributed as far as the thickness goes, and tighten it up appropriately. That's so the hinge leg is now in plumb. So this becomes rather tedious and involved from that standpoint. Then you get your framing square out, and you line that up with the hinge corner, the header, as we call it, the part that goes across the top of the door, along with the hinge leg that you have just established as to be plumb with the earth. From there, you get that all anchored with shims, and as you can see, now you move over to the latch side, and you get that lined up appropriately and hinge it from that, or you shim it from that standpoint. I'll continue on with a little bit. I see we have a caller here. Welcome, Ingrid, to the Hammer Time Radio Show. How may I assist you today?
My name is Philip.
Oh, Philip. I guess there's two names up here.
maybe she hung up.
Well, she may have, so.
But anyway, I'd just like to ask you, have you ever been out to the Winchester House in California? And if you have, what do you think of the quality of the craftsmanship?
No, I have not been to the Winchester House in California. What part of California is that in, Philip? Hello, Philip? Are we having phone problems in there, Ken, or do you have any idea? Okay, Ingrid and Philip, if you're listening, please give us a call back. We'll try to answer. We got about 1 minute left in the show. And we'll try to see what's going on. Looks like somebody's calling back right now, so I'll wait a few moments here to finish the discussion. So after we get the squareness of everything established and it's all shimmed out appropriately, then we're ready to do whatever we need to do to in order to put the door back in position and get it appropriately hung. So those are some of the very, very important things from hanging a door. The pre-hung system, obviously, as we call it, or a door with a frame, is a little more tedious, takes a little more time, and one needs to be very, very sensitive. If you have removed the door when you hang the frame itself by its location, which may be the easiest way of doing it, remember again to keep your hinges loosely attached. Remember to remove the pins, or if you kept the hinges on the hinge side, loosen up the screws as so the hinges are loose. You can remove the pins, remove the door, and go from there. If you're using ball-bearing hinges because you have a very, very heavy door system, and I highly recommend that, and any time you're using a solid door or whether it's a door with glass in it, the weight of the door itself will actually grind down the hinge, and the little black indications that you have where the hinges swing is nothing more than ground steel. Most people think of it as paste. Well, folks, we're coming to the end of the show. I see Jeff Prather is on property and just waiting to talk to each and every one of you on the Prather Point. So we'll see you next week, folks. For those of you who may be leaving town, you can listen to us streaming live, but take care. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.